The most valuable commodity on Earth today is data. How we make it, use it, move it, and protect it. My name's David McCall. Join me today for the QTS Experience. Three, two, one. Sherman Akimoto joining David McCall on the QTS Experience. Sherman, good afternoon for me. I think it's good morning for you. How are you?
Great, great. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, my great pleasure. So the reason why I reached out to you is I'm in the data center business. One, I love the name of your company, Future Facilities. I mean, I love facilities because I'm in the center of data business, and who doesn't love the future? So all of that, pretty cool. And I heard you speak a while ago in an area that I'm really curious about, which is digital twins, but specifically in the facility data center industry. And so I reached out, you agreed to come on, and I appreciate it. Thank you for coming.
Great. Yeah. Again, yeah. Thanks for having me.
So why don't we start off with what's a digital twin when you explain it?
Got it. Okay. The way we see, so I think you already know the concept of digital twin is very general. We didn't invent the concept of a digital twin. It was, I think that term was first coined by a University of Michigan professor in the early 2000s that came up with this notion that computer modeling can automate a lot of design and even operational management of complex systems. So this could, by complex systems, this could mean a manufacturing plant, an aircraft, a car, any system that needs initially to be designed, pieced together, and then run over a period of time. Mm-hmm. But in parallel, our company had developed technology that could model a complex system, actually a data center. That's really what our focus is. So our company has essentially, before we realize what the term, before that term became popular, we had developed a digital twin technology for the data center industry. So after hearing about that term being introduced to industry in general, we realized that's exactly what we have, and started applying that term to what we've been delivering to data center design firms and data center operators. But our definition of a digital twin is a software simulation of the data center that starts from initial design. So you use a digital twin technology to work out the operating specification of a data center in the design phase. Mm-hmm. So this is used by design firms. And then that model becomes or transfers to the owner of the data center for use to manage that data center over its lifespan. And the goal is for design, of course, is to optimize the performance of that data center under design conditions. Mm-hmm. But in operations, the goal is for the operator to get more out of their data center at lower risk over its lifespan, extend the life of the data center, use it more fully, and also control the risk that's involved in a system that's constantly changing its configuration, being upgraded, having to accommodate new requirements on all of these things that are changing how the data center performs. If you can simulate it first and understand cause and effect of change, then you have a chance at using it in a more efficient way and a less and reduce risk of things like failure scenarios, like overheating equipment or other things that can go wrong, tripping circuit breakers, that sort of thing in the data center. There's other benefits to it, but those are the main, that's the main goal. It's a platform that it's like a virtualized life cycle of the data center.
I love the idea. I do think most people around technology and probably most people, once you kind of tease out what a digital twin is, certainly gamers understand the idea, manufacturers that are making anything that you can build a physics model around, they get it and they do it. And my other podcast around the idea, we talked about how race teams like McLaren and others now have staffs around their simulators because they want to design, implement, wreck, et cetera, on a computer before they ever get it to the racetrack. Nobody gets hurt. It's very inexpensive, relatively speaking. And, you know, with technology like LiDAR that they use to make the tracks and all these other things, they can simulate so many things. I'm curious though, you said earlier, which I completely agree with, that, you know, data centers are complex living, I call them fully operational Death Star systems, right? You've got, you've obviously got the physical components of the roof, the wall, the entry, egress, ingress, et cetera, and the infrastructure in it. But there's so many components that are in constant state of, like, once the generators are set, they generally don't move. Once the mechanical infrastructure, it may grow, but it's generally additive. But the IT infrastructure within it and other components is in a constant state of flux. So you've got a facility that's at least 30-year, maybe greater shell. And then you've got the components within it that are constantly changing. And one of the biggest challenges in any of these environments is asset management, inventory management, et cetera, to track what's coming and going. And I mean, we know that from, you know, CFD models that we have to do and, you know, all of this other stuff just around airflow and heating and cooling. How is it when you all imagine creating a digital twin for something? It's not like you make a plane and then that's the plane and now you're putting stresses against it and you're changing something, but it's right, this is the design of this jet or whatever. And a data center with so many components coming and going, how do you survey it to make sure this is in fact what's in there, and then keep it real time so that the twin's actually the twin?
A good question. Very good question. Actually, I think there was a couple of questions in there.
Probably.
Yeah.
Not asked elegantly, but I'm curious.
Yeah. So this concept that we're bringing to the data center industry, it addresses the fact that everything is changing in the world of a data center, just like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And when things change, the performance, the value of your asset changes. Mm-hmm. And you brought up the McLaren design example. So very complex simulation technologies are used to design a race car. Mm-hmm. And in the design process, they assume race conditions. Mm-hmm. And they tweak the design for those assumed race conditions. But when you build the car and then start using it in the real world, the race conditions will change. It depends on the track you're on. It depends on the place, you know, where the track is in on the globe, the weather conditions. So in order to get the most performance out of that race car, you have to know how your race car is going to react to the operating conditions, to the conditions that of the race. Mm-hmm. And so this digital twin concept is now applied in the world of racing, not only for design, but, you know, how do we set up our car to perform its best on June 16th, 2021 in, I don't know, Monaco. Mm-hmm. So the concept of digital twin has been extended to operation. That is what we're doing with digital twin. But it even goes beyond that, because once you build a race car and you ship it to Monaco to race, you don't change the car very much. All you're doing is trying to adjust the car to the external conditions. But in the data center world, not only do the external conditions change all the time, but everything on the inside changes.
Right.
So imagine, you know, you ship your car to Monaco and you now you have 15 different engines that you want to swap in and out. You know, if you had that option, you would want to simulate to, you know, the 15 engines is to find out which one's going to perform best on that day. That's what we're doing with digital twin for data centers, because everything on the inside, the engine of the data center, the IT infrastructure, like you mentioned, Dave, is constantly changing. So how do you get the most out of that combined IT facility system? That, and the effects that we're accounting for in these simulations are very similar to the effects that a racing team has to account for to get the most out of a car. It's of course, everything you have to account for everything that's in the data center. So in that respect, digital twin is a really effective asset management tool. It's always up to date, and it's a really visual reflection of what's actually in your data center at any point in time. But beyond that, I mentioned simulation capabilities. It is simulating the physical operation of a data center, which accounts for how power is distributed, how cooling is distributed, how airflow is distributed. So there's multiple simulation technologies involved. Computational fluid dynamics is one of them that show the combined, it simulates the physical behaviors of all of these subsystems, power, space, cooling, but not only that, but also how they combine to deliver overall data center performance.
So if we stick with the car model, while it's a complex system, it is, you know, the number of components on that is, I suppose it's all, if you compare it to a bicycle, it's, you know, very, very, very lots of components. You compare it to a data center, and I should say, not all data centers are created equal. You know, there are smaller data centers that are data centers for a specific company, or even more specifically, a specific deployment. I may just have I'm a county, you know, municipality, and I have my 9/11 system in a data center that's 10,000 square feet or whatever, or it could be a data center like one of mine that is 1.5-2 million square feet with hundreds of thousands of systems within it and millions upon millions of components and data points, whether it's electrical, mechanical, IT, security, perforations, all of these other things. And I'm imagining the complexity of to do a survey of that car is one level. It seems like it's exponential to do a survey of an aircraft carrier or the Death Star or a data center. How do you imagine that you come in and you have, you know, pretty strong confidence that you have, whatever the margin of error is, but a pretty strong understanding of a real-time event. This is reality right now. It looks like this. And I love the idea of being able to snapshot that, spin it over here into the simulator. This feels very Star Trek, and I'm all about Star Trek. By the way, side note, if you ever go to Comic-Con and you get the opportunity to see the Star Wars people run into the Star Trek people at about 11 o'clock at night when they're all leaving the bars, it's the funniest thing you'll ever see, because they all have like a Sharks versus Jets snap off. They're nerds, so they don't hurt anybody, but it's really fun.
I'm Star Wars, by the way.
Are you Star Wars? I'm all of the above, man. I love them. let's boldly go where Boba Fett wants to go. I'm all of that.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, how do you go about, and no secret sauce, I'm not looking for the secret sauce, but there's got to be some kind of a robust method by which you capture that, and then you've got tools in place to maintain. And I'll bet you, like, if I'm thinking of an aircraft carrier, you know, what the cook has or the chef has in his pantry probably has some effect, but in the big scheme of things, is it wheat flour or you know whatever is not as big a deal as what's our fuel load or how many sailors are on board or whatever. But how do you categorize that? How do you do the initial survey and the ongoing survey? How do you maintain that sort of chain of custody to know what's going on real time before we can model it with any level of accuracy?
Okay. Yeah, I forgot. That was the second part of your question that you had asked originally. And it's a good one. There's two main scenarios that we can talk about in how a digital twin comes about and is maintained. One scenario would be where the digital twin starts out in the design phase, starts out as the platform where the design is formed and then transitions to operations. So in that scenario, a design firm, mechanical design firm, would use the tools to build a digital twin to conceptualize this data center. How, you know, if it's 20,000 square feet, what is the shape? What power components are going to go into the room? You know, how do I arrange them? Cooling units, mechanical system, how is that set up? And in that scenario, it's all theoretical because the data center isn't built yet, but they can get they can build this visually and simulate the operation under assumed operating conditions to get a feel for how it will perform in a worst case scenario and failure scenarios. And until they get the design to the point where, okay, it's going to meet all of our design requirements. But that model at that point is still theoretical because the data center has to be built and then commissioned, and then it goes into operations. But the digital twin, once it's finished with the design, it moves alongside the real data center in its lifespan. So the data center gets constructed and then commissioned. And at that point, the digital twin can get commissioned as well. And that, in order to do that, there is this process that we've defined where you do a survey of the as-built data center. We have all the, you know, documentation, right, of course, but a survey which has very specific steps and spells out exactly what to look for on the survey so that you can compare it to the design digital twin and essentially commission it and turn it into an operational digital twin. All right, so now you have, after this prescribed survey process and commissioning of the digital twin alongside the real data center, at that point, that digital twin model will perform exactly like within a margin of error, exactly like the real data center. And what I mean by that is, if you in a commissioning process, if you're switching up cooling units and the cooling distribution changes in a certain way, if you do the same exercise in digital twin, you'll get the same results. You'll get the same airflow patterns, the same temperature patterns, after commissioning. And then at that point, all you have to do, I kind of say that right, like it's a simple thing, but all you have to do is make sure that every change you make in operations going forward is reflected in the digital twin, and that digital twin will always be a digital clone, mm-hmm, from a, not only from a configuration standpoint, but from a behavioral standpoint to the real data center. So that's one. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say how I feel like in some ways that is, so I get the idea. I love the idea. I'm just, what's the level of effort to do that? It feels like, I've been in the data center business, I don't know, 17 or 18 years, if I forget, but before that, for about 10 years, I was IT, 7 or 8 years of that at the University of Texas. And I just remember keeping up with just my department's IT infrastructure that I was personally responsible for. Nobody brought any gear in that I brought it in. There was no, hopefully the statute of limitations has ended and they're not going to yell at me for inaccurate inventory reports 25 years later, but I was responsible for it. But it was still, it was hard, you know, whether it's everything from patching levels to what do I have on the shelf? What capacity do I have? What's my performance? What's my network performance? What's my compute performance? What's my storage performance? What do I have? How many times did I replace gear only to find out, you know what, you had all this space over there, or you had compute power over here that you didn't count for, or the back then, what we called data centers or server closets were really just cleaned out broom closets, dating myself, right? And you just put a rack in there. Who knew you had to worry about heat? But just to keep up with that, and with a few hundred systems for two or three people, that was pretty darn hard. And so I'm imagining, again, the scale of an aircraft carrier or a big core data center. I get the pristine initial deployment. I mean, we do that. The industry, the mechanical, electrical, structural engineers that have been around that to create the drawings, that do the dynamic modeling and simulation of what it could be, pretty robust. I mean, there's obviously opportunity for innovation, but it's pretty robust. It's the okay, go. And now it's this ant hive of activity, especially in our world, Sherman, where a lot of the IT infrastructure isn't mine. It's my customers and their cages and their suites and their racks.
Yeah.
And so they have to operate within guardrails that I give them. You can only have so much weight on the floor. You can't go over a certain height. You have to operate within these power constraints, these temperature constraints. But it's they have no access to go under. We're on raised floor, to go under the raised floor. They don't have the ability to go up into the infrastructure. So they have these general parameters. But other than that, they have autonomy. And so I'm wondering, how does the digital twin help organizations like us, where it feels pretty, the idea is pretty challenging to maintain the integrity of the real time. And maybe I'm getting too much in the weeds. Maybe it's enough to know, look, that suite or that cage or that rack, presuming it operates within the operational parameters that you define, this is how the data center is going to work.
Yeah, no, it's not. I don't think it's too much in the weeds. It is a good question, but there's a couple of aspects to this. One is what type of data center the digital twin is meant to manage. Mm-hmm. We kind of see three basic types. There's hyperscale, colo, and enterprise. Mm-hmm. And the form that a digital twin takes is slightly different for each. So in the hyperscale, in a way, it's much easier to maintain a digital twin, typically because everything within the data center is owned and very well controlled by the hyperscaler.
And we should, for those who aren't familiar, hyperscale, we mean the big cloud, e-commerce, social media. We know all the names.
They start with G.
That's right.
They start with F. And all those. So, and because they have such tight control, and they're also very, their business is their product is their data center, essentially. It's like they're designing a big computer, a big electronic box, and so they have very complete design teams to address putting together the most optimal computer system, which is 100,000, you know, could be 100,000 square foot computer.
Right.
Then there's enterprise, which is very different from hyperscale. Ultimately, they still are managing a big building size computer, but they don't develop the internal components. They rely on suppliers for that. And the components that they're often upgrading and changing, and based on business requirements, based on new IT technologies, can be anything from a single server in a rack to rack scale units, usually those two. And there's also a whole lot of different owners of those within the data center. So there's a lot of chaos. So that there's a lot of
coordination. To put it lightly.
Yeah. And so in those settings, one of the keys to keeping a digital twin up and running and accurate is if a lot of it falls on the operator of the data center to have processes in place where you just can't go in and make changes, you know, without stepping through a process to make sure that that digital twin is involved, mm-hmm. and even used for planning, you know, utilization of resources and making sure that you're not sacrificing capacity in the future for something you have to do today. Mm-hmm. So that's one part, is the users of the data center have to be disciplined. The other part is the digital twin itself. It's a software model of the data center, but it can be connected to live sources of information. So one example is if there is a DSIM tool in place that is used by the IT operations team in an enterprise, the digital twin can be connected so that any change that IT operations is planning to make is automatically reflected in the digital twin. And then processes can be set up so that emails are sent out to people that need to be alerted that a change is coming. And then the team that uses the digital twin can work with the team that uses a DSIM tool to say, well, how do we get this done very quickly and without risk, and so that we're maximizing data center performance. So that could happen. Also, digital twin can be connected to live sources of information. Mm-hmm. So power monitoring is a good example. You know, how much power is being used, at a certain time during the day. That information can be captured and loaded into a digital twin. That information can be captured over time so that you get an average, and then the digital twin is reflecting the average power distribution over a period of time. So that's the other part of it, is digital twin is connected to live operations in various forms. For a colo, it becomes, I think, even more challenging in some respects, because the owners of the IT units inside the data center are of a different company. Mm-hmm. So the communication gap is even bigger between the managers of the facility and the managers of the IT components inside. For that scenario, which is still being worked on, we don't have any live implementations of a digital twin yet in operations for a colo, mm-hmm. but the platform is set up so that the owners, so that the customers of the colo can interact directly through digital twin with the managers of the colo. This podcast is good timing because we have just implemented this concept at a data center in France owned by Teze. Hmm. And they have set up a digital twin. It's integrated with a data center management platform called New Generation that's being used inside Teze. The whole thing is being managed by HP. The IT part of it is managed by ATA on behalf of Teze. And the concept here is that Teze customers use New Generation planning tools that Teze has provided. That software is integrated with a digital twin, and the HP can help Teze customers optimize the utilization of capacity through digital twin in a colo setting. So it's still relatively new, but it looks very promising. All of the problems are the exact same, whether you're a hyperscale colo or enterprise. It's just how bad the problems are in terms of performance. Mm-hmm. But with a digital twin and with it integrated into a process, whether it's a hyperscale, colo, or enterprise, it becomes extremely useful for bringing everybody together to a common view of not only what's in the data center, but how it's going to perform from a resilience standpoint, a capacity utilization standpoint, resource utilization, any slice of detail that you want, you will be able to see in digital twin all together, in an operational setting.
Well, one of the things, so it's really interesting for big core data centers like ours, why this idea has really caught my imagination is we have data halls that are tens of thousands, maybe, I don't know, 60, 80, 100,000 square feet in some cases, where hyperscale customers would slide into those. They'll take down that entire data hall. And so essentially you can make, not only do you make a digital twin of a million square foot facility or 800,000 square foot facility, but for, as I'm thinking about this out loud, so it feels like we're not the size of a hyperscale, even though we have hyperscale customers, but we're way bigger than a co-location. It's this unique kind of core idea. But you could take this concept into one of the data halls, and within that, almost like I treat it as its own data center in this case. In other words, yeah, I have the overall facility, but in this 100,000 square foot area that a hyperscale is in, they are, we're going to use the word hyper a lot today, I think, hyper vigilant about their chain of custody. What's coming in? What specific rack is it in? To your point earlier about this is their product. Like they really know what piece of equipment is in what footprint, what location. They probably even have a virtual reality model of it. I mean, there's just so many ways that they use this. In fact, one of our requirements as an operator is to serve up APIs to their DSIM environment, to other things, to our own proprietary infrastructure that we've built for them. So they have a pretty robust view in. But within that, then there's a lot of control, strong chain of custody, as I said, and with that accuracy, and they're very transparent. We're very transparent about maybe not necessarily what the functions are of any of those things, but they're always driving us to efficiency. They're driving themselves to efficiency. They want to maximize their power and cooling consumption. They want to understand how in their particular environment the environment is operating, because they're pushing the boundaries of ASHRAE that maybe colo customers aren't prepared to do. And for an operator like us, it's tricky. You know, if I've just got a whole facility dedicated to that customer, I can operate so long as it's not against OSHA, whatever heating and cooling margins they want me to work in or ranges. Whereas with, because my agreements are only with them. Whereas if I go to a colo, which is kind of like if you're managing a home for one person as opposed to a neighborhood for dozens of people. If it's a neighborhood for dozens of people, I have to have common rules for the roads and for mail and whatever. But you can manage your own little micro environment however you want to. And so that's the tricky part for us. But I can see where the digital twin works, where I've got a high degree of accuracy and my customer is highly motivated to be very accurate with the minutia of what's going on. Whereas with my smaller suite cage and rack customers, it's harder. They're different. They're staffed differently. So we sort of have enterprises that are deployed in our facilities. We have colo that's, what that looks like deployed in our facilities. And we have hyperscale. And they are, all three of those can exist underneath this big giant roof or roofs. But one of the areas that is spectacularly valuable, I think, to us is, first of all, the efficiency modeling. I'll bet you we could build a model. This is what it looks like for hyperscale. This is what it looks like for enterprise. This is what it looks like for colo. I love the idea of being able to test against weather events. One of the things we're constantly trying to evaluate is how do I simulate the age of this roof? Not just a design. I know what it was designed at, but now we're 25 years in and we've gone through storms that have looked like this. We've gone through heating and cooling cycles that look like this, that maybe were within the parameters, maybe not. And what's the model telling us this looks like, not just for structural integrity, but from a efficiency rating? One of the questions or conversations we're constantly in is, besides efficiency around sustainability, but around, as we grow our facilities, how do we bring in big data, robotics, and other tools? And what would be really cool is to tie something like the digital twin in with sending a, I know this is in the future, but sending a drone out to survey the roof, a heat map, and have it report and have it do real-time data, or CCTV or whatever, that's kind of measuring heat maps and components, feeding it back to the digital model and having it compute out for us areas of risk that haven't even happened yet, so that we can deal with it ahead of time. I know I'm kind of spitballing here, but my imagination is just running with some of the ideas that you're...
Yeah, I think that you're describing really what the digital twin is intended for, whether at the current time it can simulate all of the scenarios that you have in mind is probably still up for question, but that is the concept. So
get a salesperson on the phone. I bet you they could say, yes, it could do that.
Yeah.
I'm just teasing.
Exactly. The real intent is at the highest level for the digital twin is to tell you what will happen for any physical change. And this could be on the inside or the outside of the data center. If your customers are planning on going from 6 kilowatts per cabinet to 15, mm-hmm. And they're asking you, can this be done? That's the first question. Can this be done? The digital twin will tell you yes or no. It'll tell you what the resulting power distribution of the of your data center will be, what the resulting cooling distribution, including temperatures of all the surrounding units, will be. We've seen this in action, and it sounds like a big task to set up a digital twin to answer that question. But if your customers already have some sort of process in place where we can extract information to describe that change, mm-hmm. Like the way it works right now is that a change is planned in a DSIM tool. That plan in the DSIM tool will involve all of the modules or units that are going to change. It could be units inside of a rack. It could be a SKU that is a rack scale computer. It doesn't matter how physically large it is, but all of those objects are predefined in the digital twin. So they're matched up to what's going to change in the DSIM tool. This is all automatic behind the scenes. And then all the user has to do is to, if it hasn't already been placed in the DSIM tool, is physically place them and then hit solve. Mm. And then the system will tell you, this is what will happen to resilience, PUE, your cooling SLAs, whatever. Mm-hmm. Another change might be, we're going to go from winter to summer. How does your system react to that? So that the inputs for planning a scenario to a large extent are all automatically set up for you. You may have to do some physical placements, but that sort of thing is very straightforward. You move cabinets around in the digital twin almost the same way you do it in the real. You just push it into place. And then, if you have power, you plug in, virtually plug in the sockets or connect to the bus, and that's it. You're literally mimicking physically. You're mimicking virtually what you're doing physically in the data center. So it's pretty robust in that sense. We try to automate as much as possible so that it can be used in real time as part of the operating process.
You've referenced DSIM tool. For those that aren't in the data center business, can you explain what DCIM is?
Oh, yeah. So I don't know if there's any real set definitions, but basically, say mid-2000s, people started to realize that data centers were blowing up. They're expanding drastically. And as you described, Dave, earlier, the management of that, these growing company assets was getting out of hand. Mm-hmm. Need some sort of control. What do I have? What's in my data center? What needs maintenance? What needs to be, are the leases going to come due on, and you know, it's just a management of the assets. It was becoming clear that a specialized tool was required for that. So that's one aspect of DSIM. Another one was, as the data center changes continuously, the compatibility between the IT infrastructure and the facility starts to degrade because you're moving new components in that weren't planned to be, you know, in there. It became more critical that people start to see, start to monitor what's happening inside the data center, monitor things like temperature, which is critical to control for an IT unit, monitor the use of power so that you don't blow circuits and that sort of thing. So monitoring and asset management now together is one of the main features of DSIM. And then DSIM started to be extended into things like capacity planning, like how much power am I using over the last 5 years? And if I project that out to the next 5 years, will I be out of power? You know, when do I need to build a new data center? So some aspects of capacity planning have entered into DSIM also. But that's kind of where DSIM stops. Where digital twin fits in is to account for the behavior of the data center. So DSIM tools can't do behavioral simulations. There's no ability to simulate the physics of airflow in a DSIM tool, or some DSIM tools have some power analysis capabilities, but they're usually very, that's not the focus of a DSIM tool, but power analysis is fundamental to the behavior of a data center, and it has to be inside of a digital twin. Mm-hmm. So that's the focus of a digital twin. It's behavioral analysis, and that allows you to do very accurate capacity planning because it accounts for the physics of what's happening in the data center. So ideally, when you combine DSIM and a digital twin, you have the ultimate data center management tool because you have all of your assets. You can see what's happening in your data center now, and you can project into the future. And in a lot of cases, our DSIM platform can do the DSIM portion of, our digital twin platform can do the DSIM portion as well. But we're not focused on DSIM like DSIM companies, like some DSIM companies have been for a decade. Mm-hmm. So we're not as advanced in some of the aspects of DSIM. So we're often paired with a DSIM tool. It depends on the scenario.
It's been a really cool and sometimes terrifying to see, you know, when we were bringing all these systems on as they've rolled in over the years, whether it's your UPS infrastructure, your bandwidth infrastructure or network, your electrical, all of these different components, then your IT components. And usually what you'd have is all these disparate systems. So I was trying to explain to somebody recently, it's kind of like if you had a company to do your blood pressure, you had another company to do your pulse, you had another company or tool to do your sugar levels, you had another company tool that did your weight, you'd have all these disparate systems, and they're doing no predictions. All of them will usually do real time. Some of them will even keep a history. But what it sounds like what you're talking about is you need those monitoring tools of all this different information to come in with the boundaries established so that then you can predict in this current circumstance, this is the logical conclusion in whatever area we're talking about. And if you modify input, here's how it will affect your direction. If you, you know, we do this in space flight, we do this in a million other things. You leave everything the same, you add more fuel. Here's the impact. You less fuel, take a strike to a wing, whatever. We're going to try to physically model with these variables. And you know what's going on. And the way that you can test that is, well, what is it if we enter all of the design data, the change data, et cetera, and we turn it on and we run the simulator, it should look like the current state. That's how we know that this thing's kind of tracking, right? And it's calibrated, which I guess leads me to that. How do you calibrate? Not just do the survey of getting the information in there. It would seem like, how do we tune to make sure that the expected result is the result? How do you verify that?
Yeah, another good question. Just a comment on your trying to distinguish between monitoring and simulation. You keep coming up with awesome analogies to explain these things, but
what?
a DSIM system would be equivalent to taking your blood pressure and your glucose levels and your weight, you know, all these stats on what you're, which indicate the health of your body today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so that's important. You know, you want to know what those things are. You also want to develop a history of how those things have changed over time.
Mm-hmm.
But then the question, so say you're, some of these levels are off. The question is, I want to get them back to a good state. So what do I do? Well, the history,
or maybe even, excuse me for interrupting, maybe the first one is, why'd they change? Can I see a path on why, you know, I've spray painted over my scale a number that I like. And my wife and I were just talking about this the other day. We've been married over 30 years. And
you can also wedge something under the scale so that it doesn't fully depress.
Yeah, my wife doesn't fall for that. But anyway, they my kids were like, look at all these pictures of you guys. We were married 10 years, 12 years before we had kids. They're like, look at all these pictures of you. You were smiling. You had no gray hair. You were, I'm a big guy, but I was way more slender than I am now. And they said, we've got 18, 20, and 22-year-old daughters. And they're like, what happened? Well, if you notice, in our mid-30s, children showed up, and that's when it all went to heck. So we know what the effect was on our life. But I think that's your point. When you have that historical data, you can at least hopefully do an analytic on why did things change? Can we look back at that and say, oh yeah, this is a logical prediction based upon this historical information?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the history tells you what happened. You can use a digital twin to go back and simulate history to tell you why it happened, but data center operators don't typically have the time to go back. They just want to know, okay, where am I today? And what do I need to do to get to where I want to be? And going back to the, you know, to the analogy of your own health.
Mm-hmm.
So say you know all your levels. So if you had a digital twin of yourself, you can start to experiment. Well, what if I ate this in this pattern for the next year? What will my glucose level be, my cholesterol, my, you know, if you can simulate that, I think that would be a very powerful thing for people to guide how they live their life.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what a digital twin is. It'll take all of the history. It'll take the information of how your data center is performing today from a DSIM tool, but it has the ability to simulate the fundamental processes within the data center to predict what will happen if you manage your changes in a certain way, live your data center life in a certain way, you will end up here in your data center in the future.
I wonder if one of the things that's happened in the data center business, we have a lot of conversations around, sustainability, I guess, would be the best catch-all, whether it's energy efficiency, whether it is the source of our energy, whether it is how we construct our facilities. And one of the reasons why it's such a topic of conversation in data centers is because it's near and dear to the hearts of the largest consumers or buyers of data center space and services. So the big hyperscales and some of the larger enterprises. And almost without exception, all of them have some policy around green energy, sustainable behavior, social programs, et cetera. And so I'm wondering, I guess, so what we've seen evolve, I guess, to kind of finish the point is over the last 10 years, particularly now, we're not doing business with any of these big customers, anybody in my industry, if we do not have an easily understood, robust, with governance plan in those areas. How are we operating, and what's our path to become more sustainable? In addition to that, they want to see the traditional things. How resilient are you? And it depends on the customer and the products they're deploying, and how, the economics, et cetera. Today, other than some capacity modeling and some efficiency modeling, we don't have to, we don't need digital twins in the way that you're describing, but it feels like that's on the horizon of a requirement. Like, you've got to be able to demonstrate with governance. So the first phase is you have to have a conversation. The second is that you've got to have a plan that makes sense, whatever the topic is. And the third is, how do you have governance and with, I don't know, authority, believability, I can demonstrate to a reasonable doubt that this is the trajectory that we're on. And so, for example, with compliance, I have auditors that come in and we present our control information and our history of how we manage our environments. And we're audited by one of the big three accounting firms and audit firms. And that information is reported in independent audits. And it feels like it's not going to be too much further before facilities like ours for customers like that are going to have that same level of transparency and governance on here's where this facility is going, so that we can maximize efficiency, so that we're maximizing our operational excellence. Do you guys think of that same trend, or are we still early days?
Yeah, I mean, we see a lot more to talk about sustainability. I mean, it's always been there, right? There's ever since, again, like the mid 2000s, when people started to realize that data center electrical use is shooting up. And there was this period between mid 2000s and 2010, 2012, where, you know, there's a massive spike in electricity use. And that trend was alarming, and it caused the industry to do a lot of things to flatten that trend out, and it has been flattened out. Some of these things include virtualization techniques, where before virtualization, especially when there's a lot of different departments, different people using a single data center, everybody would buy their own computer for their one little application, and you ended up getting, massive computer sprawl, because nobody was able to coordinate their and share their compute resources. So virtualization came along, and it optimized the utilization of memory and processor and storage to the point where, you could have hundreds of customers using just a few very well utilized computers. But that's at the compute layer. Virtualization now is fairly well widely used. We see the next level of sustainability reaching now down to the data center level. So virtualization, centralize the management of computing resources. Digital twin can centralize the management of the entire thing. And that's going to be the next level. And then the measure of sustainability for a data center will go beyond PUE. It's essentially PUE now, but it'll be things like capacity utilization, resilience across the entire data center floor will be important. If you're trying to stuff more compute into a data center, you raise the risk of a resilience problem. So how do you balance those two, you increase both at the same time, ideally. Well, mm-hmm. the only way you can do that is you can see the cause and effect of one against the other. And that's what a digital twin does.
When you've mentioned PUE, power utilization efficiency, how would you describe that to someone who's not familiar with a data center or that idea?
Yeah, it's a very simple concept of measuring, or it's a ratio of how much total power a data center is using relative to the power that is actually being used for compute. Mm. And you want to try to get that ratio to 1-to-1 as close as possible, because then you're using as much energy as you can to actually do real work, as opposed to just support the work that's being done. But it's not a complete measure, because it doesn't tell you anything about how safe the IT equipment is from environmental harm. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want a really good PUE, shut off all your air conditioning.
Right.
But you can't get any compute out of it, because everything will heat and burn up, right?
Yeah.
It's also incomplete in that there's actually supporting infrastructure within the computer itself, within the units themselves, that count as useful power, as opposed to power that's used for support. This cheating kind of. So mm-hmm. if you load up a data center with computers that are turned on but are not doing anything, your PUE looks better than if you would remove those. And that's not a good measure of performance either. But a behavioral model like a digital twin will expose those shortcomings of a power measurement, because it's modeling everything. It's modeling the fans and the servers. So you can shift that power to the infrastructure side and calculate PUE again with all of the supporting infrastructure on the support side and the compute power on the, you know, where it should be, making essentially a better PUE calculation. At the same time, it's also calculating the health of the IT equipment in terms of the temperatures that it needs, the, you know, whether you're getting close to power delivery threshold, all, you know, all of that is, it's holistic in that sense.
We've been talking about data centers this whole time. Where, as it relates to facilities, who else besides data centers where do you think the next frontier as it relates to facilities for digital twins is? Is it going to be in, I don't know if it would go all the way down to residential real estate or something like that. That might be, I don't know, maybe someday, but are we using it in are there any other environments that could benefit, that are as dynamically changing as data centers, that are of a size and complexity could benefit from something like this? I can't.
Oh, wow.
I'm almost wondering, like, I could see if I'm a city planner, I'm trying to make I was just listening to somebody, I don't know if they were from Accenture, where they were from, but they were talking about smart city. So it's a smart city conversation. And essentially, Sherman, what they were talking about was all the sensors they have around a city to do. Of course, the skeptic in me just says surveillance state, but the idea, one of the ideas they were talking about was taking these sensors, essentially DSIM, feeding it into data lakes and infrastructure, which then informed these data analytics machines, which then informed basically artificial intelligence. But let's just say analytics for now. And if I have a smart car and I'm coming into the city, it can route me through traffic way better than Waze or Google Maps or something like that could do, because it's real time and it can make, look, based upon your criteria, here's what you should do and how you should do it. These sensors are talking and they're having a conversation. Or I need to park. You know, you're there in the San Francisco Bay Area. I learned to drive. Hopefully the statute of limitations has expired on this as well. Delivering for my grandfather and my uncle, who had radiator shops in Sunnyvale, San Carlos, Santa Clara, Redwood City. I learned to drive all over Menlo Park, all over that area. And I know what traffic's like. And so to be able to find a place to park, to be able to route around. And so you've got this, I'm wondering if, you know, as you're looking at urban sprawl, as you're looking at building facilities or urban areas, if anybody's tried to apply, maybe that's just too complex and we're not there yet, just too many variables to apply a digital twin.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say too many variables. I would say that is probably where this whole concept is headed. Digital twins started off modeling just piece parts. You know, that I think when that concept first came about, they were it was applied to like a bracket, you know, design of a bracket, and this bracket, what does it look like? You know, how do I shape it? What does it do under stress? How does it perform under stress? And the reason it was limited to part design and optimization is because computers were limited at that time.
Right.
And over time, you know, computers get more advanced. In fact, computers are now being designed using digital twins. So the technology that is used to optimize the design is it's almost a self optimization loop that you've created, and that's why you see the you know, the shape of computing performance. It's exponential. You know, it's not linear. And we're now at the point where, to your point at the very beginning of the podcast, we can model 100,000 square foot data center in fine detail that just couldn't even be imagined when we started the company.
Yeah,
you know, about you know, over a decade ago. We had no idea that we could do that at that time, but we do it regularly now. And so we're looking at now modeling campuses. We're in the early stages of, the software is being applied to model a campus and how data halls interact with each other from a power standpoint, from a cooling standpoint, also interact with the environment. It's hard to predict how quickly this is going to go from here, but you can imagine going from a campus to part of a city to, you know, to a city itself.
Yeah, I in some areas I have a pretty good understanding of the complexity of things, and in others I'm just spectacularly optimistic and have absolutely no idea. But two things come to mind. One is I used to spend a lot of time, folks on my show have heard this a million times, with online racing. So my near and dear to my heart is where that's evolved to with NASCAR, Formula One, and other places. But in order to do racing of any kind, whether it was on your computer, locally or online, so you had to map the tracks. It wasn't just build the physics model of the vehicles. You had to map the tracks. And that was a chore to go to Silverstone or Monaco or whatever, or Indy, to map that track and the stands and their very blocky technology from the late 90s, early mid 2000s. Now they go out there in a day. They take a few drones, they take a couple vehicles, they take their LiDAR infrastructure and high def cameras, they run, and I'm not trying to oversimplify it, but it's a few days of running around. They feed all that high def data, camera data, and LiDAR data in, the models run, and essentially they have a digital twin of the map or of the track, the paddock, the everything, the guardrails. They were now looking at, what's the thickness of this guardrail? Is it concrete? Does it have the safety zone? So that when a vehicle in the online race hits it, the physics model of the vehicle crumples just the right way that they've tested. It's
mind-blowing.
And so so that was one. The second was, last year I wrote an article about agrotech, this fascinating area that I have very little experience with, just have read and try to inform myself on. And I'm imagining digital twinning a farm, crops, and simulating what is it like when I fertilize a certain way, or when the water or the whatever, the weather works a certain way and crops are at a certain height and these things change and these are the environmental conditions. And here's what it is real time by all the sensors that are, you know, livestock's now wearing wearables. My tractors that John Deere makes, they still may want a human being in it. I don't know, but it's kind of like an autonomous vehicle. They just want you in there out the windshield, but the robot essentially drives the vehicle around.
Yeah.
And that seems like it's a great frontier, another area where we're trying to get wildly efficient. We have labor shortages because nobody wants to grow up and be a farmer anymore. We have bandwidth challenges getting out there. And so to be able to do this and model and we've got to make more food as, you know, as our population grows. I don't know. I was just curious with your experience on where some of the ripe markets are beyond data centers for this. Seems like everywhere, but I'm just curious about where we think the low hanging fruit is besides manufacturing.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to project out because like you say, it could be, almost anywhere in human experience. Mm-hmm. The thing that personally that seems like an area where a digital twin would really be effective is in healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, improving the figuring out, you know, things like the cause of cancer or the human body is just way more complex than probably anything we've described up till now. But if we can get into the fundamentals of how the human body is operated, like we can with data centers now, that could have a massive impact. And we're setting up DSIM systems for the human body. I mean, I got one on my arm right now.
I do too. It keeps telling me to work out and stand up. So I'm going to have to get a new one.
Yeah, it's not working right. Yeah. Anyway, we're, you know, just at the very, very beginning of that. But that sort of thing to me is most intriguing is, you know, how it could affect healthcare. But the area that we're focusing on right now and within our company is expanding the impact of digital twin beyond, like when we started, it was mainly focused on how is the cooling system doing?
Right.
But now we're at the point where how is the whole data center operating as a unit, optimization of the entire thing. But we want to get to the point where a business person inside of a company can say, if I set up my data center portfolio globally in this way, assuming we're going to hit these markets, is that a better way of doing it than option B, distributing it in a different way, building a different number of data centers and do a business performance analysis for the entire data center portfolio of a company. Is it better to keep this one running or shut it down and, you know, go to the cloud or play those kinds of business performance what ifs for the company? Who knows? Maybe we'll go beyond that and be able to try to model the whole company in its entirety. So you got one guy making all the decisions.
Right.
I think that's being done right now at company A, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm sure. I love the idea. Yeah, people sometimes, they're like, data centers. Why are you in data centers? And it was chance that brought me here. Very few people end up in the data center business, at least of my generation, because they said, you know, I want to grow up and be in the data center business. We just sort of ended up here. But the way I look at it is the ideas of the whole world live in a data center, somebody's data center. Coca-Cola's formula doesn't live in a physical safe in downtown Atlanta. It's in a data center, their data center, company A's data center, somebody's data center, or digital twins. They live on somebody's computer, which lives either virtually, physically in somebody's data center. If that's true, if every piece of music, every, a picture of every great piece of art or company notes or whatever lives in a data center, that makes them some of the most valuable commodities on Earth, and we need to make sure that they are operated excellently and they're available if that's where the 911 system is, or the, you know, those brain image scans, and all our healthcare data is ultimately collected and organized so that we can help human flourishing. Well, we should make sure they're operated securely and correctly and efficiently. We've talked mostly about power, but the same thing goes for water or any other resource that comes into that facility, yeah, including human resources. So,
yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Man,
I mean, when you think about it, I think, more and more of our existence, like this meeting here, mm-hmm, is done virtually on a data center platform. You know, I look at my kids and their lifestyle is so different than mine when I grew up. They interact socially. They in the last year, they learn,
right,
they shop virtually. You know, they live half their lives in a virtual world, which is alarming to me.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a trend we can stop.
Yeah.
I just hope that we find some sort of balance. I mean, we're in the very early stages of this digital transformation, and I think we're all struggling with what's the balance. You know, where is this going to go? In parallel, like you say, though, we need to also make sure that these systems, that a lot of our lives are being experienced in, are you know, efficient and good for the environment and cost effective, and actually help and balance the good with the bad, mm-hmm, that comes with living in a virtual world.
Well, tools are tools. I mean, I've always believed that, and I'm not trying to be glib or oversimplify. A tool is a tool. And I think that a lot of the consequences we've had in the last decade in particular of the digital world, you know, human beings are attracted with almost, it's just in our reptile brain, availability and variety. And so in some part, let's just take food. In some parts of the world, you see people that have pretty simple diets, and they are, you know, where there's a good availability of fresh, healthy water, a good availability of a combination of protein and fiber and whatever, whatever those cultures are, they live a long time, generally speaking, as long as their neighbor doesn't hurt them and something from the wild doesn't hurt them, or they have an accident. I mean, they just live a long time. When we add a lot of variety and it's cheap and available, whether that's an online, you know, we can numb ourselves as human beings watching a million things. We get caught up in distractions. And so that's fantastic. I love it. I live it, but it slows us down from moving usually. It slows us down from, and we know that sitting all day is not good for human beings. It's not how we developed over the years. Our brains have to work and our bodies have to work. And so when we have a lot of available of cheap food, human beings eat cheap food. And, mm-hmm, and so you've got these consequences. By the same time, it's convenient. Yeah. But at the same time, I watch my friends, one of them who is pretty overweight and has some serious health issues, got, I forget what the bicycle is, it Peloton? The bicycle connects to the virtual world. When they try to do their exercises by themselves, they just lost motivation pretty quickly. When they connected to a community using the digital platform but combined it with the physical world, man, they're all in. They're not missing their ride because they're with their people that they know in their virtual community. And so it's this blend, I think, it's always healthy. How do I use the tool to help human flourishing? And as we learn, this thing can capture our attention because there's availability and variety, and that's what we're attracted to. So as parents, we put safeguards on. As people in community groups, we put safeguards on. COVID didn't help in the last year, but we're turning the corner on that, thank goodness. But at the same time, I wouldn't toss the tool. I mean, when we invented airplanes, we also invented the airplane crash. When we invented airplanes, you know, a pandemic can spread much quicker.
Yeah.
But nobody's saying, let's stop international travel. Let's just adjust.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do.
It sounds like you're talking about that movie, ready? Is it Ready Player One? Is
that? That's one of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember who directed that? I just Steven Spielberg.
Oh, okay.
I started laughing the other day. I forgot. I never knew, but I was like, look at Spielberg's body of work over his life from Jaws, the first movie that truly terrified me as a kid with just a soundtrack. Right. All the way up to Ready Player One and Schindler's List and all these great movies and Minority Report. By the way, another little fun fact before we go, a friend of mine who writes for Rotten Tomatoes that I've had on the podcast said he used big data one time to do research, and he found out that the more Tom Cruise runs in movies, the more money the movie makes. Because I had asked him, do you think AI is going to start writing movie scripts? He goes, I don't know. The AI would tell you to make a movie with just Tom Cruise running the whole time, because the more he runs, the more money he makes. I thought it was pretty funny.
That makes sense.
Interesting times. Well, Sherman, thanks for coming on today. What haven't we talked about that we should have? We've covered quite a bit.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't expect the conversation to go the direction it did.
Hey, man.
It did. But it was interesting and fun. And I really, to be honest, I can't think of anything else. Covered it all.
Well, hopefully you'll come on again soon, and we can kick around where this world's going. Thanks for joining me today. And
absolutely. Thanks for having me.
My great pleasure. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, please like, subscribe, share, and comment. We'll have links to future facilities and Sherman's information down below. Check it out. Sherman, have a good one.
All right. Thanks.
We'll see you. Bye-bye.
See you. Bye.